allegations and decide Charlie was guilty after all, he'd throw her in jail. That thought alone could bring on the panic attacks. So she'd disappeared. As far as anyone knew, besides Mac, she'd gone back to the University of Wyoming to finish out her last year studying animal science. As soon as she didn't fear for her life anymore, as soon as she found out who had killed her mother and why, and that person was behind bars, then she could go back to school. Maybe. It would be hard to get on with her life without her mother, but that's what Mama would have wanted. Charlie didn't want to let her down in this life or the next. Dawn filtered through the trees and cabin windows, which meant she'd slept late. She rubbed her tired eyes. She needed to figure out why Clyde had driven up the driveway to the house she'd shared with Mama. Charlie's house now. Yawning, Charlie shrugged out from under the covers and began the task of making her cowboy coffee. She used a Coleman propane stove, easier than a wood-burning stove. Staying in the cabin was just like camping, except she had stacked logs protecting her at night instead of the thin vinyl sheets of a tent. The coffee would take much too long to heat up, though. Last night, she'd stayed up late, waiting for Rufus to come back, and listening to the lack of night sounds in the cold mountain air. She'd eventually fallen asleep. Rufus. A sliver of hope drove her to the door. Would she find the German Shepherd sitting next to the cabin? When she opened the door and looked out into the crisp morning, disappointment displaced her small hope. Rufus! She called. The dog was gone. She'd thought they were friends. She'd figured he would remain loyal to her, though he'd belong to Mac, who had given him to Charlie for her protection. Rufus had probably gone back to Mac, unless something had happened to the dog. She closed the door and got dressed. She'd search for him as best she could before heading into work with the horses. Then she would try once again to stop at the house and look through Mama's things. If she could find out where that trust fund had come from that paid her college tuition, the home renovations, and for a better life, that might give her some answers. Mama never spoke of family, including grandparents or even Charlie's father, other than to say they'd all passed on from this life. She didn't even know who her relatives were. Admittedly, Charlie had never cared much about that until now, when she had no one left. If she had someone else, maybe she could share this burden with them and find her mother's killer. Charlie had to take it one day at a time. Be careful and methodical. If she hurried and became careless and allowed someone to recognize her, that mistake could be deadly. Chapter 32. Friday, 12:59 p.m., Bridger County Sheriff's Office, Grayback, Wyoming. Willow waited with Austin in the sheriff's office. They'd arrived 3 hours ago, but the sheriff had been too busy and kept putting them off. At least they'd been able to grab sandwiches from a vending machine. The sheriff spoke with a deputy just outside his door about an ongoing search and rescue involving a couple of teenage boys who had gotten lost hiking. Her heart went out to the families. While she waited, she'd had time to study the photographs of the sheriff with his department awards, as well as with various friends and family members. He had had quite a career. Huffing, Sheriff Haynes entered the office, shut the door, and sat at his desk.
As you might have heard, we got a couple of boys missing, so let's make this quick.
He whirled around in his chair to a credenza and pulled papers from a fax machine. then faced them again and scooted closer to his desk. He adjusted his reading glasses and stared at the pages. He slapped the sheets face down on the desk as he skimmed each one, then brought his full attention to Willow and Austin.
"I want to make this clear up front. I am helping you for several reasons. One, because I know and respect Heath. He's made himself a pillar in this community. He's like a son to me. I'd do just about anything for friends and family. Two, because you were attacked, and the note tells me there's a connection. So while your investigation into the past isn't my investigation, they're connected. The sooner you find what you need, the better. After a few phone calls, I confirmed the story and the original picture of the abductor. I put it up on our website and sent the image through law enforcement channels throughout the state.
Since the original picture was grainy, I'm not sure how accurate it is, Willow offered.
That's a problem, to be sure, and this might lead nowhere.
A deputy knocked on the door and stuck his head in. One of the guys she saw at the cabin last night. Deputy Taggart?
Sorry to interrupt, but I thought you might want the information.
Without an invitation, he stepped into the office and zeroed in on Willow.
I got a call this morning from someone who claims they might have seen the woman in the picture you sent out. Claims she lived around Clare, a small town one county over in Hoback County.
Willow sucked in a breath. Next to her, Austin tensed as well. Deputy Taggart looked to his boss, who lifted his chin, letting his deputy know he could continue.
I called the sheriff in Hoback County and spoke directly with him. He wasn't sure about the picture, but said if it's who he thinks it is, the woman died 2 months ago.
His words weighed heavy on Willow. But what about the daughter?
I asked. Sheriff Everett said he didn't pry into people's lives. Said you were barking up the wrong tree. That's all I could get out of him.
But he gave you a name, right?
Mary Lee Clemens is the woman who died. But I didn't get the daughter's name, sorry.
A name, if this is the woman we're looking for, could make all the difference, Austin said.
Thanks, Taggart. I'll take it from here.
Sheriff Haynes peered at the deputy, his expression not completely warm. Taggart nodded.
Yes, Sheriff.
He closed the door behind him.
Well, looks like you have a name now. You can't be sure it's even the right woman, just based on that picture.
You're right. We can't. But it's a start, Willow said.
Now, is there anything else I can do for you?
I think we're good, Austin said.
Thank you for your time.
Sheriff Haynes shoved from his desk and stood.
You're welcome. In the meantime, I'll turn your break-in and the note over to my investigations unit, and we'll see what we can find out. But I need you to understand that I have my hands full with not only residents, but tourists, and our SAR unit. I'm happy to help if I can, but you two have been hired to do a job. I suggest you do it and head home.
In other words, he wanted them out of his jurisdiction as soon as possible. Willow and Austin stood as the sheriff opened the door to dismiss them.
We hope to wrap this up soon and appreciate your help, Austin said.
At the door, the sheriff said,
If another crime is committed against you, be sure to call us so we can look for evidence while it's still fresh. Are we clear?
The sheriff's friendly gaze shifted from Willow to Austin and hardened. It was subtle, but Willow hadn't missed the coldness toward Austin. There must be a story behind that. Something Austin hadn't shared. No surprise there. Willow and Austin thanked Sheriff Haynes and exited the facility. Sitting in the Jeep, Willow powered up her laptop. Austin used his tablet. "I'll look at the county appraiser's website for Marilee's property," Austin said. "Good, I'll search for any articles about her death." They both worked in silence for a couple of minutes. "Found her. It's an article in the local newspaper," Willow said. "Says here she was killed. Murdered." Unshed tears surged. "Oh, man." Austin leaned back against the seat.
"Bad enough she died. But why didn't the deputy mention that? I think we should march back in there and ask the sheriff about the murder."
"Believe me, he's been very generous with us, but it's not his county, so we might not even know."
"Really? If they haven't found the killer, probably all law enforcement is looking for the suspect. What about the sheriff in the county where she lives? Hoback County? How do we find out more about the murder? I wonder if they solved it."
"One thing at a time." Austin stared at his tablet. "Got the obit here. She worked at Claire Nursing Home. Oddly, it doesn't offer her surviving relatives like her daughter." His eyes met Willow's. "She was a nurse." "Let's search her name and see if we can find her daughter. Look for a picture. Maybe we can also gain access to her house and look around." Willow couldn't remember the last time she'd seen so much excitement in his gray eyes. They brightened almost to a silver blue. "If she looks anything at all like a young Caitlin Mason, that will tell us something. But what if she looked nothing like Caitlin? That wouldn't necessarily mean she wasn't her daughter."
"I hope you're right."
He peered back at his tablet. After a few minutes of searching, they both came up empty. No images of Marilee's daughter on the internet. Not even a name. What could that mean? That Marilee was very protective of her daughter's identity? Willow shut her laptop. "Let's go with what we have. Go to the nursing home and ask questions."
"Let me do the talking, Willow. I know what I'm doing. People aren't that willing to talk to strangers these days, and we definitely don't want to tell them we think she abducted her daughter. That would raise hackles."
Hackles. She loved how he'd morphed back into a guy who'd lived in Wyoming. Agreed. Marilee Clemens might not be Jamie's abductor. We wouldn't want to cast a bad light on her. Austin put away his tablet before starting the Jeep and steering onto the road that would take them to Hoback County and the small country town of Clare. It wasn't that far, but still took time on the curvy mountain roads. Willow called Dana, hoping to find out if she'd learned anything from the genealogical records, if Caitlin had connections to Wyoming. She could ask her to search the records on Marilee Clemens. Maybe that would turn up information about her daughter, abducted or not, or other family members who might be willing to share. Willow ended up leaving her a voicemail. As they headed north, Willow could just make out Grand Teton to her left. She took in the stunning scenery once again. Then it disappeared behind another peak as Austin veered right at a fork in the road. She considered everything they'd learned so far and hoped they weren't barking up the wrong tree, as the sheriff had said. If not, then this was further than anyone had gotten in the investigation, at least according to the files she'd read. Sheriff Haynes had given them a lot today. Make that Deputy Taggart. There'd been something antagonistic in the sheriff's eyes when it came to Austin. Willow wanted to know why. She reined in the questions she had for him. She would only overwhelm him and shut him down again.
How did she get this guy to open up? More to the point, why did she care?
Chapter 33. Friday, 2:04 p.m., Grayback, Wyoming. Austin gripped the steering wheel and focused on the road. He tried to ignore the scenery and the realization that he'd missed this place. He also tried to ignore Willow's citrusy perfume that teased his senses. He could try all day long to overlook the fact that he missed Willow, but his efforts would fail.
"You seem distant," she said.
"I'm thinking about helping you find this woman while keeping you safe." He glanced her way, hoping he'd injected enough humor into his tone. "My brain doesn't work like yours. I can't think on multiple topics, much less talk about them at the same time. I usually zero in on one thing."
Usually. But Willow was a huge distraction for him. Willow and the Wyoming setting.
"I get it.
You're super focused. Two things don't leave much room for me to make conversation. I'm sorry."
The sheriff seemed like a nice enough guy, but I got the feeling he didn't like you. Was I reading him wrong?
Great.
Nope.
Willow sat silently. Austin suspected she was keeping quiet in hopes that he would freely divulge more information without her having to pester him. How long would she wait?
5 minutes later, he chuckled.
"I'm impressed."
"About what?"
"You haven't asked me more."
She smacked his arm.
"Are you going to tell me or what?"
"I'd prefer not to get into that while we're gearing up to question people at a nursing home, but I will tell you this much. It's wrapped up in my father's accident."
The sheriff was close to the family who died along with him.
A few beats of silence from her. Then she said, "He seemed to like Heath. He even mentioned he was like a son to him."
"The sheriff blames me."
Now why had he said that much? He'd prefer to talk about it later, but that was just it. If it were up to him, he'd procrastinate until it was forgotten.
"Care to share with me why he blames you?"
"Not particularly. But I know you won't stop thinking about it, and you need to focus on the task at hand."
Austin switched on the blinker and took a right toward Claire. He sank lower in the seat.
"I had an argument with Dad. He'd been drinking, and I argued with him and let him drive off mad."
He wished Willow hadn't asked. Grief tore at his insides. Why did she always want to pry? She'd poked around at a painful wound that hadn't healed. When would Austin learn? This was exactly what had driven a wedge between them before, his unwillingness to talk. Couldn't she understand he wasn't ready? Still, maybe it was time he tried. He regretted losing her before. He'd given her something, at least, but he needed to clarify. "I let him drive off while he was drunk," he repeated. "I didn't know he was drunk. It took a lot to get him there because his liver was already toast. But I should have known. I should have seen it. I'll regret my part in that for the rest of my life."
"I don't know what to say."
Now that could be a first. He steered through the town with one stoplight and turned into the Claire Nursing Home parking lot, found a space and parked.
"There's nothing you can say." Without waiting for her response, he climbed out of the Jeep. Together, they strode to the building and Austin held the door for her. She scooted by him, leaving that citrusy scent again. He shook it off but wished he hadn't when he followed her in and was met by nursing home smells. Disinfectant and asparagus. In the open area, a A circle of patients sat in chairs and wheelchairs and tried to throw beanbags to make it inside a hula hoop on the floor. Others hung back from the circle and watched. Approaching the nurse's station, he introduced himself and Willow to Kim, a tall, lanky nurse with bulging eyes set in a pale face under short black hair. Taking in her no-nonsense matter-of-fact expression, Austin decided on a direct approach. "We've been hired by a family member to look into Marilee Clemens' death," which was indirectly true. "I was told she worked here." Nurse Kim's bulging eyes looked them up and down. Would she be friendly and cooperative, or unwilling to talk?
"Yeah, she worked here. I know her well enough to know she ain't got no family. Least, none that showed up at the funeral."
"She has family," Willow said. "She has a daughter."
"Besides her daughter, I doubt she hired an investigator."
Oh boy, this was going south and fast. "And why is that?" One of the elderly men who lingered outside the circle rolled his wheelchair closer, as if he had something to say, then seemed to forget where he was going. He stared blankly. Nurse Kim came around from behind the counter, her fist and a manila folder on her hip. She sighed, then waved them back to a room and shut the door.
"What do you want to know? A deputy investigator already asked his questions. I take it he didn't offer you any answers."
"You've already told us she didn't have any family besides her daughter. What about friends?"
"She worked here for a good 15 years. We were her friends. Outside of this facility, I'm not sure. You'd have to ask Charlie."
"Charlie?" Kim's eyes bulged even bigger. "If that were possible. I thought you knew her daughter."
"We know her as Charlotte," Willow said.
"Great recovery."
"Right," Kim shrugged. "I don't know what I can do to help you. I hope you find her killer. Maybe between you and the sheriff's department, she'll get justice."
Austin offered her his business card.
"If you think of anything that can help us, here's my card."
Kim opened the door and exited, leaving them to show themselves out. "What now?" Willow asked as they walked out of the room and into the hallway. "We have the daughter's name. We didn't have that before." Kim headed toward the man in the wheelchair who'd approached earlier.
"Can I help you, Mr. House?"
He lifted a gnarled hand as if pointing to Willow.
"Marilee. I know Marilee."
Chapter 34. Hope swelled as Willow approached the man. He wanted to talk about Marilee. She shared a look with Austin and saw that same hope surging in his eyes. The elderly stored a wealth of information, especially when it came to the past. JT always said there was no greater travesty than when a family history died with a family member who never bothered to share stories of the past. Or when others didn't bother to listen. The result? Families forgot where they came from. Since Mr. Haas wanted to talk to them, this was where Willow would take the lead. With a look at Austin, she lifted her chin, and he gave a subtle nod. Kim clutched the wheelchair handles, ready to roll Mr. Haas away. When Willow approached, she put on her biggest smile. It was genuine. She loved talking to the elderly. Mr. Haas smiled back, and Kim relented as though realizing he might enjoy the conversation. Willow crouched to his eye level, keeping her smile in place. "Mr. House?" He slowly lifted his hazy eyes to meet hers and nodded,
wisdom that could only come with age lurked there. My name is Willow Anderson.
Do I know you?
His voice gurgled. We've never met, no. I came here to talk to someone about Marilee Clemens. Do you know her? A confused expression shadowed his eyes, and he slowly shook his head.
Can't say that I do.
Willow could hardly contain the disappointment that gripped her, but she continued. If only she could get him to talk about something, maybe important memories would surface. I'm a genealogist and visited the cemetery up the road. The house name I saw on one of the tombstones was spelled H-A-U-S. Is that how you spell your name? He tried to angle his head back at Kim, who remained behind him, as though she would know. Then he reached for his mouth with a trembling hand, as if commanding it to speak.
Yes. People don't know how to say my name. Never did. It's pronounced hoss, not house.
Willow offered a soft laugh. You're not alone. As someone who has studied genealogy, I know something of family naming conventions. It happens all too often. Tell me about the man in the grave. She hoped the topic would get him talking about his family, and then back around to remembering that he knew Marilee.
That's my father in the grave.
His voice wavered with uncertainty. Willow sensed he still hadn't decided if he could trust her. With the deepest respect, she patted his hand. Her heart went out to him. Many people left in nursing homes were lonely. It broke her heart, but often families didn't have the resources to care for their elders themselves. Mr. Hoss started talking about his family, just like she had hoped. Arms crossed, watching from a distance, Austin stood against the wall. She shook off the sudden self-consciousness and listened intently to Mr. Hoss's story.
My great-granddaddy worked the cattle drives, but my grandpa never cared for it. Settled in Jackson Hole, working at a mercantile. My daddy worked with hunting outfitters. As for me, I got me a good construction job, and my sons...
He held up two fingers.
I have two of them. Nothing I did was good enough. They hardly come to see me anymore.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Mr. Hoss. He grinned and winked at her, grabbing her hand.
But you? You can come see me as often as you want.
The man had turned feisty and was flirting with her. Willow giggled. Oh, I'd love to come as often as I can, but I don't live here. His expression shifted, surprise evident in every wrinkle.
Oh? What brings you here, then?
Now was the time to bring up Marilee again. I'm looking into something for a friend who lost someone. He stared off into the distance, his silver brows pinched.
I lost someone. I lost a friend. She worked here.
He twisted around in his wheelchair to stare at Kim for confirmation. She nodded. Was merrily your friend, Mr. Haas? A tear leaked out of the corner of his red-rimmed eye.
She took care of me. No one else is gonna take care of me.
He tried to roll his wheelchair away from Kim.
Now that's just not true.
Kim clung to the handles, her intention clear.
We're all here to take care of you.
Willow stepped back. She hadn't meant to agitate him.
Merrily knows my secret, he whispered.
Kim began wheeling him back to his room, speaking in calming tones. Austin rested his hand on Willow's shoulder.
Come on, let's get out of here.
No, wait. I want to apologize to Kim.
Austin headed for the door and waited. Kim's shoes squeaked back down the hallway. She appeared surprised to see that Willow was still there. Just before she headed into another patient's room, Willow called out.
Kim frowned, then approached.
Look, I have work to do.
I wanted to apologize. I didn't mean to upset him.
I know you didn't. I appreciate that you took time to talk to him. I wish I could have warned you he gets like that. He has dementia. He only has one son, not two.
Juggling a clipboard and a banana, she rubbed her cheek against her shoulder.
Is it okay if we come back and talk to him?
Kim looked at her clipboard as she walked away. She called over her shoulder.
I suppose that's up to him.
Chapter 35. When she and Austin approached the Jeep, Willow noticed a slip of paper stuck under the windshield wiper. It flapped in the breeze. They both had spotted it at the same moment and both reached for it, but she was quicker. Before she opened the paper, they both glanced around.
Let's get in the car first, he said.
Inside the vehicle, Willow opened the note and read it out loud.
If you keep looking, if you tell anyone, her death will be on your hands. Her life depends on you now.
Willow gasped for breath. She opened the door and bolted from the car and into the parking lot, where she bent over her thighs to suck in air. If she kept going, she was going to get Jamie killed.
It's not fair. You hear that, God?
The pavement rolled and blurred. Whoever left the note was probably watching her reaction now. The thought that someone had followed them to this nursing home overwhelmed every nerve ending in her body. Austin's strong arms wrapped around her.
Willow, Willow, calm down, please. I can't stand to see you like this.
She tried to shrug free. Leave me alone.
No. I don't want you standing out here in the open. We need to leave. Now.
His voice left no room for her to argue, but she tried anyway.
Just let me catch my breath. I need a moment, okay?
She couldn't get enough air.
What are we going to do?
He guided her to the vehicle.
Later. We can look at security camera footage to see who left the note. But I have a feeling this person wasn't that careless. But right now, we're going to get back into the Jeep and get out of here.
She climbed inside and shut the door. She'd made a complete fool out of herself.
I'm sorry.
No need to apologize. It's no less disturbing to me.
Austin started the engine and steered the Jeep out of the parking lot. Maybe more disturbing to him, since he was supposed to protect her.
Where are we going?
Away from here.
Whoever left that note,
has been following us. Who is it? He watched the rearview mirror. She'd noted he was always on the lookout, so she couldn't understand why he had missed their tail. But she didn't want to accuse him. Now wasn't the time for that discussion. On the console, a plastic bag held the note. Everything was evidence to him. He couldn't stop collecting it. We have to end the search, Austin. He's going to kill her. And we're so close to finding her. What am I going to tell Caitlin?
We have to tell the sheriff.
He can contact the local FBI, too, who can then decide to reopen the case. And don't worry. We can make it look like we're going to give up on the search while we hand over this information.
Willow hung her head. That will take time.
Too much time.
Possibly.
How do we make it look like we're giving up? Do we leave Wyoming?
We're close to finding her, Willow. That much is obvious.
I need time to think.
We can't just walk into the sheriff's office and hand over the note. That could also be a death sentence for Jamie. So what do we do next?
I'm going to take us back to Heath's. I want you to breathe and relax. We're going to find her, Willow, and I'm going to figure out who has been following us. Maybe he hasn't been following us at all, but because we're going to the right places, he knows where we'll be. This means we're getting closer.
Doesn't he realize that leaving us notes tells us we're on the right track?
He must be desperate.
Would the guy who'd broken into her cabin try again? Would he kill her this time? Chills crawled over her. She rubbed her arms and looked out the window.
Who have we met along the way that we could add to our list of suspects?
Let's think this through slowly and methodically.
Willow pressed her head against the seat back and closed her eyes.
So we have a name. What sort of name is Charlie for a girl?
Good call coming up with Charlotte in front of Nurse Kim. But the name Charlie? Maybe that's the point. Her name makes it sound like she's a boy.
I think you're right. I can't believe we're so close to finding her.
But what exactly would they find?
There's something else at play here. Mr. Haas said Marilee knows his secret.
That could be taking us off track, Austin said. The nurse said he has dementia. It could be nothing at all. Remember, he thinks he has two sons.
It could be connected, see? We believe Marilee abducted Charlie, and Mr. Haas says Marilee knows his secret.
She stared out the window. But everything has changed now with the note. Anything I do could be construed as continuing the search.
Right. Everything has changed. But we can't give up on finding Jamie. Charlie. I'm just not sure yet how to continue without putting her in danger, but we'll figure it out.
Will we figure it out in time?
Why is someone just leaving notes now when in Seattle someone was trying to kill me?
Someone who succeeded in killing JT.
Willow clenched the armrest. She couldn't wait to find this person and make sure justice was served.
That's a very good question. When we get back to Heath's house, we'll get on the internet and find out as much as we can. Why don't you call Dana and give her an update? Find out what she knows, too. Maybe we'll pack up and make it appear that we're leaving tomorrow and hand the note off then.
If only we could figure out where Charlie is so the sheriff can protect her.
We need her picture to go with the name so we can be sure that she is even Caitlin's daughter.
Maybe we could get her DNA if we could get into her house and work the case like that.
One thing at a time, but I think the notes are confirmation that Charlie is the one. We don't want to tip this person off. I'll figure out how to inform the sheriff. Just give me time to think.
Time.
Something they were running out of.
I was watching you back there.
You were a whiz with Mr. Haas.
She regarded him. Why was he complimenting her now? Trying to calm her frazzled nerves? Did he think that would work? What can I say? I love anyone who can remind me of JT. Watching the road and the rearview mirror, Austin managed a cute triple-dimpled grin. He must have a clue how that grin affected her. Why else would he brandish it now? When he looked her way, esteem registered in his gray eyes. She turned her attention to the scenery. Once she and Austin were able to put their past aside, they actually began working well together. Not something she needed to linger on. The conversation with Mr. Haas, still fresh on her mind, Willow thought about JT. If he had lived, would there have ever come a time when he would have stayed in a nursing home? If he had, he would have put a brand new spin on the old adage, the life of the party. Mr. Haas seemed like a nice old man. She wished his son would come visit him.
Marilee knows my secret.
What had Marilee known? Whatever it was, did it get her killed? Friday, 5:11 p.m., Emerald M. Ranch. Back at the ranch, Heath met them at the door and introduced Evelyn, his adopted grandmother housekeeper. Willow warmed to her immediately. Did Heath know what a treasure he'd found in this woman? By the adoration blooming on his face, yes. Yes, he did.
Can I help you in the kitchen, Evelyn? She asked.
Oh, heavens no. You're Heath's guest. If I need help, Heath can help me. Evelyn squeezed Willow's arm. You go upstairs and freshen up. Supper will be served in half an hour.
Are you sure? Because I'm happy to help.
Evelyn chuckled and winked.
Maybe next time.
Willow did as she was told. After freshening up for supper, she gathered in the dining room with Heath and Austin. She still hadn't heard back from Dana, except a text saying she would send along an image shortly. Willow's phone buzzed just as Heath carried lasagna into the room and set it in the center of the table.
Excuse me, I need to look at this.
Willow pulled up the image Dana had sent. Austin hovered over her shoulder.
Is that her?
Do you even have to ask? Willow smiled. She looks like the image of Caitlin in her 20s. This updated version could help us more than the outdated photos on milk cartons that have been circulating for years. But look, the artist included different hairstyles to help us. She scrolled through the pictures. Evelyn and Heath stood at the table and waited.
I don't mean to be rude, but we just got the forensic artist's compilation of what this girl should look like in her 20s.
Willow flipped her phone around so they could see the image. Someone abducted her 21 years ago. No one knows where she is. Chapter 36. Except Heath. His heart scrambled around in his chest. He knew the girl in the image. He knew where she was, and that she was hiding. He'd been the one to help her hide. He also knew there was going to be trouble. Part of that resided with him. Because what he didn't know was who had hired Austin and Willow to find Charlie, a girl who didn't want to be found. He needed to redirect their attention while he recovered. Figured out what he should say and what he shouldn't.
Well, why don't we eat before it gets cold, since Evelyn worked so hard? We wouldn't want to disappoint her.
While they plated their food,
Heath worked to compose himself, appreciating the training he'd received as a Green Beret. He could almost be grateful for the experience of living under a brutal alcoholic father. Heath had learned to maintain his composure under the worst circumstances. He'd count this situation among those. He and Austin were finally reconnecting. Heck, he'd go so far as to use the word reconciling. But Austin and the genealogist had been hired to find Charlie. Too many questions swirled around her mother's murder. And considering Clyde's relationship with Marilee, and that Clyde was Sheriff Everett's cousin, something smelled like too many dead salmon floating on the Grayback River. Heath had sworn to keep Charlie's secret while she searched for her mother's killer. She stayed in a cabin just under 2 miles up the trail, close, but not too close. Heath might never have considered helping Charlie, going to such lengths, if he hadn't already been through a similar tragedy. He'd befriended a young mother at a church he'd attended near Fort Carson, Colorado, where he'd been based. She'd had a restraining order against her ex-husband, but that hadn't been enough. Heath had assisted her in finding a place to stay, but had made the mistake of sharing her location with a friend. If only he hadn't. Her husband found her and almost beat her to death. Heath showed up in time to stop the man, but he blamed himself. He wasn't going to make the same mistake twice. He wouldn't give Charlie up without good reason. He'd die before he'd let anything happen to her. "How's the food?" Evelyn's question yanked him back to the present.
"Excellent, as always," he lied.
The lasagna was probably wonderful, but it tasted like cardboard at the moment. Not her fault. His stomach had soured at the revelation of who his brother and the genealogist had come to find. Austin and Willow went on about the lasagna, even the elk meat sauce, and thanked Evelyn. Smiling, she sauntered back into the kitchen. Willow claimed she'd hired Austin. But by that hope brewing in Austin's eyes when he looked at her, Heath suspected much more was going on. If Austin had found someone and fallen in love, Heath couldn't be happier for him. Even a little envious. But his inner demons wouldn't let him do the same.
"I hope you're paying her what she's worth."
The teasing gleam in his brother's eyes singed his heart. He wanted to be forthright, but not yet. He couldn't reveal Charlie's secret, not until he had all the facts. Aware that Austin was studying him, he tilted his head to the kitchen.
"I can't afford to pay her what she's worth."
He paid Evelyn plenty, but she was a priceless gem. Finally, after he forced down an entire plate of lasagna, Evelyn would worry if he didn't. He figured it was time to dig deeper, for his own peace of mind and for Charlie's safety.
"Tell me about the person who hired you to find this girl. What do you know about him?"
He couldn't imagine that Clyde or Sheriff Everett had hired these two, especially since they'd come all the way from Seattle. Made no sense. What was going on?
"Well, I suppose we've already shared with the sheriff," Willow said. "So you might as well know. I don't usually share clients' information for their privacy sake. You understand."
Heath set his napkin on his plate, waiting for an explanation. "A family member has been searching for her a long time. It's complicated." Willow hesitated. "I might as well tell you, her mother has been looking for her." The lasagna churned in his gut. Her mother was dead. She couldn't have hired them.
Heath fought the urge to bolt from the table and pace. To blast these two for taking this assignment. Finding out who had hired them could help solve Marilee's murder. But he had to play this right to prevent them from tipping off the murderer.
You say her mother has been looking for her?
Austin pushed his plate forward and clasped his hands on the table.
She was abducted from a hospital 21 years ago.
This was too much. Heath wanted to run from the table. Instead, he eased away. He wanted to rail at them. Instead, he said nothing. This person had lied to them, had hired them to find Charlie because she'd gone into hiding. Staring out the window at the pristine lake reflecting the mountains, he hoped the view would soothe him, but was disappointed.
Why, God, why is this happening?
Heath wanted to trust Austin. He needed to trust his brother. Except he wasn't sure he could count on Austin to track with him on this. How pathetic was that? He'd wanted this reconciliation with Austin, hoped to see him around more often. But now, he found himself on the opposite side of their search. He never imagined he'd find himself in this kind of jam. He would love to give Austin the benefit of the doubt. But how could he do that without jeopardizing Charlie's safety?
You all right, Heath? Austin asked.
Willow had begun to help Evelyn by stacking the dishes. Heath wanted to tell Evelyn he'd do the dishes later so they could have some privacy. But he couldn't do that without hurting her feelings. She didn't want anyone in her kitchen anyway.
I was thinking about the young woman. If she's even still alive, she has a life now, has friends and hobbies and a family. Why destroy her life with the revelation that her mother isn't her real mother?
He knew that was just a lie, a big fat lie, to fuel the search. Heath turned on them and eyed Willow. Her eyes grew wide from the intensity coming off him. He should tone it down, but he couldn't rein in the confusion and anger. Unfortunately, he wasn't the man he thought he was if he couldn't control this. This so-called mother could be the one who murdered Marilee and wants to find and kill Charlie.
Have you considered that the woman you're looking for doesn't want to be found?
Chapter 37. Friday, 5:59 p.m., Bridger Teton National Forest. She didn't want to be found. A dense copse of spruce trees kept Charlie hidden as she stood next to the horse. She'd ridden Amber to her house, picking her way through the back trails. She ran her hand over the soft hair of Amber's lightly freckled neck. The familiar scent of evergreen needles and musky horse comforting her. Then, she lifted a pair of binoculars to her eyes. Mac hadn't minded that she'd wanted to take Amber for a long trail ride. One day, she'd have to pay him back for his generosity and willingness to keep her secret. The man was nothing if not trustworthy and honorable, even if he'd been a little pushy about his religion. She was glad she'd listened to him on that point. After spotting Clyde driving up to her house, she couldn't afford to park Bronc there and take her time searching. She thought her house would have fallen off his radar by now, that she would have fallen off his radar. What had brought him back to the house? Trying to cover his tracks in case someone decided to dig deeper? She'd wanted to get in there and dig first, but she hadn't wanted anyone to know she'd stuck around. If everyone, including her mother's killer,
thought she was long gone from here. Then she would be safer. Some might think that disguising herself and staying off-grid was overkill, but they hadn't watched their mother get murdered, hadn't gotten their own lives threatened. She knew with a piercing certainty that he wanted to find and kill her. She had to find him first.
No, please don't do this. I'm sorry. I made a mistake. I shouldn't have asked for more.
What had her mother meant by those words? Charlie would get justice. The Hoback County Sheriff's Department had their hands full when the region exploded with tourists. Ongoing search and rescues. The list went on. She didn't know where the state police were on her mother's case, if anywhere. All she knew was that nobody cared as much about finding Mama's killer as she did. Her vision blurred as the tears came. She swiped furiously at them.
Oh, Mama, I miss you.
Lowering the binoculars, she pressed her face against Amber's pink muzzle, rubbed the horse's neck, thought about her mother. Mama never made much money from her job, but that didn't keep her from talking about the two of them taking a trip to Europe when Charlie graduated college. But Charlie didn't want to travel. All she wanted was to ride horses. She dreamed about them all the time and drove Mama crazy. On Charlie's 15th birthday, Mama finally took her to ride a horse. Then 3 years ago, she met Mac and started to work for him on his ranch in the summers. Pull it together now, girl. You were meant for great things. She could hear Mama's words. Now she was all alone in the world. Mac was the only one she would trust. He'd been her only friend when her world fell apart. Well, Mac and Rufus, until the dog had run back to Mac. A man's best friend, sure, but apparently not a girl's best friend.
That's okay.
She slid her hand along Amber's neck, running her fingers through the coarse hair.
You and I understand each other, don't we?
The horse chuffed. Charlie loosely tied Amber's reins around a tree.
You stay here until I get back. I won't be long, I promise.
Riding Amber in was a good plan. She wished she'd thought of it sooner. She could enter through the back of the house. If anyone approached, she would hightail it out the same way, like she'd done the night she'd escaped certain death. She would run for Amber, who would carry her off into over 3 million acres of Bridger-Teton National Forest. Charlie kept to the edge of the woods until she had to cross 2 acres of meadow and then made her way to the back of the house.
God, please keep me safe.
Odd that the prayers came more often now. Mama hadn't been much of a churchgoer, and just when Charlie wanted to go to church, she couldn't. Not yet. At least Mac had loaned her a Bible.
Please, help me find something tonight.
Chapter 38. Friday, 6:33 p.m., Emerald M. Ranch. Growing up, Austin had spent as much time as he could in these woods, pretending he was someone else. Pretending he was safe. As if on a mission, he dragged Willow deeper into the dense forest. The familiar surroundings ignited memories, both good and bad. Tensions had mounted at supper, given their conversation and Heath's question. His brother's words had disturbed Willow. Austin wanted to get her away from Heath so they could talk. So while Evelyn prepared a special dessert at Austin's request, he'd taken the opportunity to bring Willow to his woods. They always calmed him. Maybe it had been a bad idea to stay at the house. He'd question Heath about his sudden agitation later. Austin was tired of secrets. Now that he suspected Heath was hiding something, Austin better understood how